This is a HeadGum Original.
There's a witch or there's a magical clown that's killing a ton of people every 7 years or every 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then people still move there. It's just hard to believe.
I buy that there's a magical clown for sure.
Yeah. That's easy to get by.
I'm here for the magical clown.
It's just like in a sci-fi show when you buy all the sci-fi, all the time travel or whatever they're doing. Mm-hmm. But then when the character opens up his laptop and he starts using Bing, then you're like, whoa. Wait a minute, rewind.
Yeah, in no reality is this tech-savvy astronaut using Bing.
Not conceivable. Even though this is the year 2572, it's still within that amount of, they're going to need more time to make Bing mainstream. Give until the year 3000, and then the investment, the advertisement, will pay off.
Let's punch it.
Welcome back to Punch Up the Jam. This is the show where we take the greatest hits of all time and we punch them up. We make them a little bit better. And I'll give you a little bit of an introduction here. My name is Evan Gregory and I'm one of the hosts. The other current host of this show is my brother Andrew Gregory. And you may be aware, if you listened to the episode of the last couple of weeks, that he's away on paternity leave. He became a dad. Great job, Andrew. And now begins my insane reign on this podcast as a solo host, and you don't know what kind of chaos I'm going to bring to the table. All of the sounds that Andrew hates, I can just play. But it just doesn't feel the same if he's not here to complain about it. So we're going to have to make our own chaos. But it only makes sense that for the first guest on the podcast during Andrew's absence, I'd bring in the absolute closest possible replacement, which is our other brother, Michael Gregory.
Welcome.
Michael Hello. Gregory is one of the Gregory brothers, the third out of three Gregory brothers, and the only one that wasn't previously hosting this podcast. But we've been making things together for 12 years, and we've been brothers basically since I've known him. Michael, it's great to have you on the podcast.
It's an honor to be here, and that's an honor spelled with an O-U because it's like a British honor. It feels very fancy.
Like a knighthood type of honor. We can't get to Pennywise unless we understand foundationally what is this song. Bring Me to Life, I read from the first line in the Wikipedia article, is a song by American rock band Evanescence. You already have a bone to pick. Is rock even the right word to use to describe this band? If I were going to describe this song, I guess I would use that hated term from about that was coined about 20 years ago, which is nu metal. And you know how people spell it with an N-U?
Mm-hmm. Because it's even newer than the traditional spelling of new.
You have
to let people know with the title.
Yeah, it was so new that they had to change the vowel. And a lot of people use the umlaut because when you make it look vaguely German, it gets scarier. And that's a fact. That's just a known thing about phonetics.
Mm-hmm.
And probably about world history.
Right. You feel like while you listen to this song, you're watching Midsummer.
So Bring Me to Life is the introduction to the world, basically, for this band Evanescence, which is what's unique about them as a rock band? Their female singer, Amy Lee, is like the writer and the face of the band. It's really her outfit. And it's her amazing voice that really carries the sound of this band. But Bring Me to Life is the first thing that broke big for them. And it's just a monster, monster hit. It came out in 2003, topped the charts. This song peaked within the top 10 of more than 15 different countries. And most of the rest of the world, it was within the top 20. I think a lot of people maybe don't remember because it was in the MTV era that this song came out. So a lot of people then are seeing the music video over and over. But a lot of people don't remember that this song was in a massive movie This song was on the soundtrack of Daredevil, the early Marvel movie with Ben Affleck and Jennifer Garner.
So it's in the movie, not just the credits.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is in, well, maybe I should make you guess.
Okay.
I should do it in the absence of Andrew. I'm going to spring this on you. Andrew does this thing every week where he springs a quiz on me.
Okay.
Then you get $5, $5, baby.
And I almost always lose, which is why I hate it, which is why I get to do it now to you, my guest. I will Venmo you $5 if you can get the answer to this question that I just thought of. And okay. So you have wide latitude to get this right, because I'm making this up as I go along. What kind of scene does this song, Bring Me to Life, appear in the movie Daredevil?
What kind of scene? Okay. All right, so my three guesses would be, I know I don't have three guesses, but if I had three guesses, they would be credits,
mm-hmm.
Fight scene, or training montage. Like Ben Affleck, he's Daredevil, so he's, you know, he's hitting bricks. He's doing his, like, he's just got a machine to throw bricks at him, and he's punching them or something like that.
Yeah, they're flying through the air, and you just practice your chopping, even though he's blind.
Yeah.
He's chopping bricks out the air. Well, the correct answer.
So between those, but I have to pick an answer, right?
Yeah.
I can't just be throwing you three answers, or mm-hmm, else I would mm-hmm. only get, you know, a fraction of $5. I'm going to guess training montage.
That's it!
Whoa!
You did it! You knew!
Oh, wow. I almost said a fight scene there.
It's a training montage!
Oh, wow. I'm sure I was wrong about how he's training, though.
It's a training montage. No, you're way off. But you knew instinctively that that this aggressive song would be the background to a training montage in which the hero hones their skills. But I think it's actually Jennifer Garner's character, Elektra.
Okay.
Who is...
She's training.
Yeah.
All right.
The way I remember it is she's practicing hitting sandbags with knives.
Okay.
That's very similar to your...
to hitting bricks that are flying at you from, like, a brick-throwing machine. Yeah, I didn't say Ben Affleck training in my answer, but you're right. I was off on the character.
We have to get into playing the song, of course, but there's just a couple other things on the background of this song that, like, the casual listener might not know. Everybody's probably heard this song because it was so big when it came out. Like I said, it's got a billion views on YouTube, despite coming out years before YouTube even existed. I mean, that's Despacito level numbers. This is a massive, massive song, and everyone just assumes that it's got the two singers, Amy Lee, the female singer who's got this, like, breathless belt, really pure tone, a really unique sound. And then it's got this dude over here yelling at you, wake me up, the whole time. That's like in the tradition of that time where you
truly the yin and yang.
Yeah, I don't know. There was just a thing in bands of that time where to make the song more aggressive, you needed to also have a dude yelling at you in between the sung bits. And so you just think, when you hear this song for the first time, Evanescence is a band with two singers. It's one of those bands like Linkin Park. The one guy sings and whines, and the other guy yells at you.
Yeah, you know, and in a Greek odyssey, this guy would have been the antidote to the siren's call. You know, your boat would have been hearing this beautiful powerhouse voice, like, singing a magical thing, luring your ship in, luring you, gonna kill you. But then the guy would be like, wake me up! And you'd be like, nope. Turn the wheel, get out of here.
Ulysses, to home. This dude with the blonde dyed tips from Evanescence has wakened me up from my trance. Well, as a matter of fact, this guy is not the second singer in Evanescence. Fans of the band would know, but casual listeners don't know that this guy is not in the band. He's uncredited on the track, but is added just as a bonus for this song. And as we listen back, that dynamic gets a lot more interesting when you find out that Evanescence only wanted it to be Amy Lee's vocals, and their label threatened to drop them didn't add a male singer so that they were more marketable.
What? This is blowing my mind because I just assumed it was part of the band because it isn't like Evanescence featuring Brad on
right.
this track. It's just Evanescence, right?
Yes, yeah, that's right. I think maybe when it was republished later, this guy's name is Paul McCoy, and he's from another band called 12 Stones, and they were on the same label, Wind Up Records. They were on the same label as Evanescence. And the crucial pivot here is that Wind Up Records got a deal with, I think with Marvel, but at least with the movie Daredevil to supply a bunch of the soundtrack. They're like, oh, we could get our, I think Evanescence is the right sound for this. But Evanescence at that point is already threatening to walk away because the label had already, you know, tantamount to require them to add a male singer. So the compromise they reached is, can we please get this soundtrack deal? Because it's going to be worth a lot to everybody if we just add a guy for the one song. The label says, if you just add a guy for the one song, then we won't make you add a member permanently. So they took that deal. And, you know, on some level, maybe let's listen back and decide, like, surely you can say that they were right to, like, take the deal because you get on the soundtrack, the movie's huge, and that makes the song huge, right? Because it's in the movie.
Yeah.
That makes it a launch pad, you know? But we can ask ourselves the question, like, did it make the song more marketable? Can we guess would it have worked otherwise?
It's hard to fathom now making that decision because you hear the song and you're like, man, great song, but what's with the yelling? But at the time, you're right that it was just kind of this trend of having this rappy guy just coming in, like with Linkin Park, you got the screaming, like, crawling in my skin. And then the other guy's like, I want to get out of school. Let me out. When the bell doesn't ring, my heart stings or something. You know, you got the guy just inserting those little things. And so I could see why the label's like, we got to do that. While Elektra is punching the bag, we got to have the guy rapping about school.
Yeah, you're only a couple years past Limp Bizkit and like, come, my butterfly, sugar. So it seemed like a shoo-in. Yeah, what seems very dated now was, you know, perhaps the right move at the time.
A billion views don't lie.
A billion views don't lie. I'm telling you, if YouTube had been around at that time.
Yeah, it would have 5 billion. It would have 10 billion views.
I'm pausing it within two notes. You're haunted. You're like, this song could only have been written by a ghost. This song is too haunting to be human. It's cinematic. It's spookier than anything else you hear if you're tuned into modern rock radio.
And great for a movie because it kind of straddles that line. They call themselves, or they don't call themselves, the industry sometimes calls these things rock or new metal, but it really feels almost like orchestral pop rock. And that's what makes it good for film scoring because it has some elements that a film score would have too.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that's something that Evanescence would say about themselves. And in interviews, they talk about how they're drawing on classical music when they write a lot of this stuff. But then in a moment, the guitar is going to come in. The strings.
Can we pause it for a second?
Yeah.
Okay, so I listened to your episode about the Kelly Clarkson song about sidewalks.
And yeah, with
so
Tequila.
She had this song that's the same producer, right?
Yes.
And so the
Because
intro
of You by Kelly Clarkson was produced by a couple of the band members from Evanescence.
Okay, and that came out after this, right?
Yes, maybe like, I mean, pretty soon, maybe like the next year. So Evanescence had maybe won a Grammy by that point and is enjoying a lot of success and fame.
Okay, so the intros sound really similar, and since then, I've had a Berenstain effect, a Mandela effect. I think just for me, I haven't talked to other people. They probably haven't had this happen in their own brain. But I thought this song had a voice being like, "Ooh," in the intro, but that doesn't happen. That happens in the Kelly Clarkson song. So the Kelly Clarkson song incepted me into thinking that this song has that. This would be like the boring version of the movie Inception, where like they go through all this stuff, and then at the end, like, you know, they've incepted the idea into his head on the plane, and they land, and Leonardo DiCaprio goes home to his children and spins the top, and he's like, now the man thinks that Evanescence sings "Woo" at the beginning of the song. Like that was the purpose.
What a horrible curse.
We implanted this other song to get mixed up.
This is a great callback to a previous pod episode. I'm just going to pull it up. Let's listen to the intro of the Kelly Clarkson tune. We just heard the Evanescence one. How similar are they?
Ghostly vocals. Slightly less ghostly piano.
Yeah, pretty similar. And I see how your brain just imported Kelly Clarkson
yeah.
Oohing around to the intro of Bring Me to Life. Bring Me to Life, much spookier, though.
Mm-hmm.
They knew what they were going for mood-wise.
How can you see into my eyes?
Like if that was produced now, that impact sound would have so much bass. That sound right there.
Yeah, that it's like a bass drum in the abyss.
Whoa, okay. All right.
If you're a teenager hearing that song for the first time, like your mind was just absolutely blown. They were teasing you before this
mm-hmm.
with this rising tension. This melody's really tense. A little half step. Movement up top, like really high in her register. The melody has a lot of tension in it.
And the beautiful vocals over the crunchy guitar.
Yeah, when those crunchy guitars come in, you're like, oh, snap. This is 2004 teenage you, hypothetical you. Oh, snap. A girl was singing and they got crunchy guitars?
In that one moment, it turns you into a goth. Right before that, you know, you're wearing jeans, you're wearing Abercrombie and Fitch mm-hmm. or whatever.
A sports jersey.
All of a sudden, you look in the mirror and you got eyeliner.
Yeah, you're wearing a tattered skirt and a Cannibal Corpse t-shirt, safety pinned in the back. But you're right, though. One listen to this song and your preppy polo shirts are gone. You're staring into a shattered mirror,
mm-hmm.
looking at your own reflection in shards of glass.
You're reading Edgar Allan Poe.
With your eyeliner running down your cheeks.
A raven is talking to you all of a sudden.
Yeah, all sorts of animals talking to you.
Yeah.
Ravens, goats, a chihuahua probably
mm-hmm.
would be up there. Everyone thinks chihuahuas are just about Taco Bell, but they're surprisingly goth. They got those deep eye sockets.
Nothing more goth than a taco.
I know the answer to this, but what do you think this song is about?
Bring me to life. Wake me up. Bring me to life. I'm going to guess depression.
Oh, great guess. That's a great guess.
It's about getting out of school.
Here's what... the most nu metal of all subjects.
Yeah.
How can you see me? I hate my teacher. Don't want to go to school.
Won't let me play hooky and see the rated R movie. I'm going to act up and get thrown into juvie.
I want to stay at home. Play video games. School is lame. How can you see into my eyes like open doors leading you down into my core where I've become so numb without a soul, my spirit sleeping somewhere cold until you find it there and lead it back home? This is scary stuff.
I'm sticking with depression.
The story behind the lyrics is that Amy Lee met this random guy who's like a friend of a friend. And she had barely knew the guy, but she's sort of, I think it's before they had their big break, but she's advancing in their music career. Maybe Evanescence had been signed or something like that, so they're performing a lot. And this random guy asked her when they were sitting down at a restaurant, "So, are you happy?" And in that one brutal moment, she was like, "No, I'm not." Mm. And I think that one comment caused her to have introspection. And this whole song is about that guy, how he saw into her eyes like open doors.
Okay. So it's the opposite of what you think, that it's someone really close.
Yeah.
It's like, I know the real you.
Now, that's the story behind the song. And what's amazing about it, or maybe, I don't know, maybe you'd think of foregone conclusion, is that 3 or 4 years later, she married that dude.
Whoa.
Yeah, I guess he brought her to life. That brings me to my primary thesis, which is that this is probably the biggest hit ever written about therapy. This guy just asked her, are you happy? And it caused her to reflect on her life and her emotional health.
Yeah.
So I think you're pretty close. You guessed depression. That's pretty close. And the correct answer is, it's about a guy asking her if she's depressed. And it woke her up. That question being posed just woke her up, doggone it. Oh, that was cold.
I love a dropout.
Oh.
It exposes the vocals.
What a move. What a move. Building tension. You start with the orchestral strings with this minor key, half-step shaped melody. It's really twisty and enticing. Then her ethereal, no other word for it, ethereal vocal comes in, drawing you closer and closer. Then they surprise you with the crunchy guitars, chugga chugga, everything getting bigger and beefier and more aggressive. Then what a move.
And then how she sings so quietly at the end of the verse. That's a supreme move because, you know, a lot of times people crescendo, but this is so effective because it's like when the dad sternly whispers at you, right? It's more effective than yelling.
It's like dad got so mad, he went all the way around the circle and came back around to whispering.
Yeah, it's horseshoe theory, but for dads.
Yeah.
And yeah. Where the yelling is equal. Too. I'm not endorsing horseshoe theory, but I'm saying it's like horseshoe theory.
And I'm not endorsing dad whispering either.
Yeah, me neither. I endorse whatever type of dadhood you are into, you do you. But one thing I really love about that verse and this song is how all this interesting stuff is happening in the harmonic structure and with the instruments. They're doing all this cool stuff, going around by half steps, changing chords, but you got that pedal tone. The pedal tone meaning in like the bass or like the thrust of the song is really on that one note, like da 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 da.
Yes,
da,
I was going to say the same thing. Even though she's going around and she's kind of winding her way around all serpentine. When the crunchy guitars come in, they don't move. They're just going chugga 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 chugga.
Yeah, they could have easily moved to other notes that go with the chords. And I mean, that note does go with the chord. They could have gone to different routes, but they don't. And I think that's a really cool choice.
Yeah. I did find the stripped out vocal of this song. You can listen to just her vocals isolated on this part that leads up to home.
My spirit's sleeping somewhere cold until you find it there and need it back home.
Ooh. The other thing I want to say about Amy Lee's performance, Amy Lee, the singer of this tune right here, is how little vibrato she's using. It's like really pure tone on almost every note, with only a few exceptions. Spirits sleeping some. And a lot of times in a vocal performance, vibrato kind of releases tension. So by not using vibrato almost exclusively across this line, it keeps it really tense, in my opinion. You follow me?
Yeah, I totally agree. Imagine the version of this song where it's like, Broadway.
My spirit sleeping somewhere. Now it's a song from Les Mis. How can you see into my eyes? 2, 4, 6, 0, 1. Please wake me up, my love. Wake me up inside. I need your warm embrace for these chihuahua eyes.
All right, keep it going. Keep it going.
Please
upside
wake
down,
up,
boy, you turn
me.
With your therapy, you bring me to life.
Wake me up! And then a third guy comes in
and
he just starts yelling.
Wake me up!
The Phantom of the Opera and Brad.
Broadway needs more dudes yelling.
Wake me up inside.
Wake
Okay, pop quiz. What do you think "bid my blood to run" means?
Bid my blood.
These are the lyrics. Wake me up inside. Wake me up. Say, call my name and save me from the dark. This guy is yelling at you. Wake me up. Can't wake up. I guess that's sort of implied, in my opinion. Wake me up because I can't wake up. And then she goes, bid my blood to run.
Bidding sounds like an auction, like it's one of those weird Illuminati conspiracy theories.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
1,000, 2,000, 3,000 for young woman's blood, 23 years old, type AB, no STDs, very rare.
Yeah. I like the use of the verb bid. It's so medieval. That's such a goth move to use the verb bid in the, I think it's the usage of that word that means tell you to do something. Like, the king bade me to ride out to his lands and bring the serfs about for a union. Mm. He bade me.
Bade me farewell.
The queen bade me go forth and ride on my steed out to the cliff and keep running until I am crushed on the rocks below.
So she's saying she's so unwoke at this point that her blood is just not running.
I think that's right. She went full coagulation. And she needs this guy that's waking her up inside to bid her blood to run. But don't get it twisted. This is not a love song about a guy that's waking her up inside with some kind of arousal. This is waking her up to her own internal emotional life. That's how I understand it. Please, my blood has stopped pumping. Please bid my blood to run. I'm having trouble getting out of bed and going to school.
Now I'm imagining this meeting as like a meet cute in a Starbucks. Right. It was like the barista is like, hey, how are you? You happy today?
Like, no! Yeah, in my mind, it was a freighted moment, just like this moment in her life that was a crossroads sliding doors moment. But yeah, it could have been maybe he was even the barista. Mm-hmm. I'm just taking for granted that they were sitting at a table staring into each other's eyes. But he could have been just pulling lattes. This could have been at the Wendy's, and he's just filling fountain sodas. Hey, order 37. Are you happy? I don't know. I like that version of it where suddenly the camera's zooming in on her face. Am I happy?
Mm-hmm.
Am I happy? I just got woken up on the inside at the Burger King BK Lounge.
Just like killing me softly, because that was about a random guy, right?
Killing me softly with his cappuccino, killing me softly, said, how are you doing? Telling my whole life, he bid my blood to run.
Yeah, imagine that song with,
killing me softly with his song. Kill me softly with his song. He's killing me. I can't get dead.
Well, yeah, once you add that guy shouting, Elektra could work out to killing me softly.
Yeah. Once you add the shouting dude, it takes any song up a notch. So, you know, I was thinking of a punch-up version where we just delete this guy, who at the time probably is making the song more marketable on some level because mm-hmm. of what else is going on in music, but now sounds horribly dated. I don't know. If you already yeah. love the song and you're listening to it 15, 20 years later, you're like, yes, I still love this. But if you were just to hear this cold right now, you're like, this guy yelling is incredibly cheesy. This is for dorks.
To me, that is the perfect punch-up. It's a beautiful song, and all you need to do is find the tracks, delete a few tracks, mute a few tracks, and you're done.
Well, I have some bad news for you, Michael. I have some bad news for you, which is that Evanescence, the band, already thought of that.
What?
And they punched up their own song 4 or 5 years ago.
They one-upped you.
They one-upped us. They've beaten the pod to it by punching up their own song by deleting the yelling guy.
Oh, wow.
They deleted the...
They finally saw enough YouTube comments or something.
Yeah.
They were like, fine.
And as we already mentioned, that was the original vision for the song. The original vision was just, wake me up inside. Just the singing. Just the singing. And the label was like, this is not going to work without a dude yelling. And that's how the famous version, the album version, the official version came to be. So then the band put together a remix album 4 or 5 years ago, and they did a like really fancy orchestral version of this. They just deleted all the rap bits.
Oh, we should listen to some of that.
Okay, but we're getting ahead of ourselves because we're already talking about deleting this poor guy. Poor Paul, the yelling rapper. We're already talking about deleting him, and we didn't even listen to everything that he's got to say yet. Maybe it's going to get better.
True. Yeah, let's see where it goes.
You're right.
It's just a hair late, so it's almost syncopated.
You're right. She's singing syncopated, and he comes in on the beat. Can't wake up! Okay, what happens next?
Love those stereo guitars.
Yeah. Okay, this is rad. We're into the second verse, but they didn't cut the guitars. Now the crunchy guitars are just in. Full adrenaline, full testosterone, full aggression on the verse. The crunchy guitars going. They're stereo guitars so that it sounds really thick. There's one copy in the right ear, one copy in the left ear. Just chugga-chugga, choo-chooing away.
Arrangement getting more and more powerful with its evolution. It's like a Pokemon that's reaching its second form right now.
Yeah. We've gone Super Saiyan at this point, mm-hmm. I think.
At this point, the person behind her in line in Starbucks is getting impatient because they just wanted a drip coffee.
Right. They're waiting on a frap. And Amy Lee is she singing this out loud in the Starbucks?
You're right. It could just be internal. It's like in one of those movies where it happens in like half a second, even though it's a full 5-minute video.
Right. And then at the end of the 5-minute video, it just cuts back to the same moment in the Starbucks with a middle-aged businessman behind her saying, excuse me, your drink's ready?
Mm-hmm.
Miss? miss, excuse me? Oh, what? Why, I was just lost in my thoughts.
Oh,
whoa.
I love that synth.
Beep, 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 beep. So that's the same spot where they cut out in the verse one for home. So they did a similar cut out with a little variation where it's just that syncopated synth. It's really doing the same syncopated, like we'd call that an ostinato, that repeated rhythmic underlying thing. They're doing the same rhythm that the crunchy guitars are doing during the verse. The guitars are going j-j-j-j-j-j-j-j-j-j. So then at the cutout, it's left with that sort of violin-sounding synth. Or maybe it's a violin sample that's been cut by the producer going, right? She sings, you can't just leave me, breathe into me and make me real. That's sort of like the bidding my blood to run. She was a corpse. That's so goth.
And once again, really making it sound like the music video could have been her being resuscitated, defibrillated. They didn't do that. I think in the video, she's walking around this old building on the ledge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, this is from the height of the MTV era, so the music video is really at the centerpiece of how people would know the song back in 2003. And the video is her wandering around a skyscraper and then eventually falling out the window. And the yelling rap guy, Paul, even with his buff nu metal arms, can't save her.
The most funny part of the video to me actually is, and this really goes with our thesis of needing to punch this up as they already did by just muting those tracks, because it seems like, so she makes it to this window, uh-huh. And this band is playing inside, and you know, the guy's rapping.
Right, her band presumably.
Yeah, her band, and he's yelling, and he comes and sees her at the window. Then there's this bizarre part of the video where she's kind of like hanging on the window, mm-hmm. Or she has her hands on the window, and then she's standing there. And right when he, like, I think yells something or raps something, I'm not certain, he just, like, whips open the window and is like, wake me up, or something like that. He whips open the window, and then she, like, falls off the building.
Oh, no! So,
really, I don't know if this was the intention, but it really seems like this guy just made her fall to her death, whether it's real or in her dream. I think it may be in a dream in the video. But this dude, he really seems like a klutz in the video.
Yeah, all the more reason to delete him. She'd still be with us today. She wouldn't have fallen out this window. Of course, in the video, when she falls out the window, then she just wakes up, and it was all a dream. Right? Isn't that how it ends?
I think so.
Classic stuff. Very similar to suddenly coming to your senses in the middle of a Starbucks. Oh, it was all a reverie.
Wake me up. Wake me up inside. Wake up. Wake me up inside.
have to hand it to him, though. Yelling rapper can also really sing.
Save me!
Ooh, okay, we made it to a new section.
I love how the sections sort of overlap.
Oh, he's whispering.
Yeah, let me pause it. Yeah.
He's doing the full spectrum of dad being stern.
Yeah.
The whispering.
I mean,
the
what can't this guy do vocally? He belts, save me! He yells at you, can't wake up! And then he does a scary whisper.
I've been living a lie.
And he gets syncopated. I think in the song, in the arc of the song, he's jealous that, like, wait a minute, the singer's doing all this syncopation, and I sound like a guy that can only yell. Well, guess what? I can whisper off the beat.
Yeah. The whole band is doing these really crunchy syncopated type rhythms, and he's stuck doing the kindergarten ta-ta-ti-ti-tas. Can't wake up! I don't know. There's something that's... I can't put it into words, but there's something really funny to me about him going, wake me up. I can't wake up. You know, I don't know. Is it? I can't pay the rent.
You must pay the rent.
I can't pay the rent.
You must pay the rent.
Wake me up. I can't wake up. Wake me up. I can't wake up.
I've fallen and I can't wake up. The button around my neck is out of battery.
Paul, get in here. We're in a dire situation. We need a male singer on this track. Do you have some time? Get in here. No, we don't have time to write any lyrics. What do you got? What do you got? The song is about becoming aware of your own internal emotional life. Wake me up. That's great. Paul, get in there. Get on the mic. That's all I got. Well, then just say the opposite. Can't wake up!
The whisper is scary, though.
Yeah.
The whisper is scary.
I've been living a lie. There's nothing inside.
I know. I'm going to be checking under my bed tonight. It's a little too spooky.
This is a whole new section. Frozen inside with that guitar. Okay, I have to pause it here because I think they have a real problem with the songwriting here, because as cheesy as many of the elements are, I basically like that this is a song about therapy. That's like, they probably wouldn't say it's about therapy, but that's what it is. This guy asked her to really reflect on her feelings, and then she had to do that. Honestly, that's kind of cool that this is not a song about, hey, I'm sexually attracted to this other teenager, 90% of all pop songs. And then they got to this bridge, which is musically cool, going to this new place, frozen inside. But then all of a sudden she says, without your love, darling. Ouch.
So you're saying it caved from being about your inner feelings? And
yes. They caved. I don't know whether she wrote this one line or not. You know, it didn't make the song not be a hit, but you know, just looking closely at it, they caved. Just like you said, they caved. They didn't know what to put on this line. And then the default when you're trying to write a pop song is to make it about love.
But you don't know whose touch she's talking about. It could be the therapist shaking her hand when she enters the room. You know, frozen aside, I missed a session, didn't feel the handshake.
Mm-hmm.
My check that I wrote didn't go into your hand.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. So I'm not feeling so good.
Yeah. Or like many of their brand new fans back in 2003 may have thought that it was Jesus's touch.
Right, like a metaphorical thing.
Yeah. I found out that a lot of people just assumed that they were a Christian band, and this song started charting on Christian radio. And then Evanescence put out public statements and had their label put out public statements saying, quit it! We're not a Christian band! We don't want to be associated with that.
Yeah. They should have just made the bridge like scatological, or just throw in something weird to like make it not chart on that kind of radio.
That's a really good point. That's maybe a potential punch-up, is if we just took out this one line that is really puncturing the main theme. If we took this bit out that says, without your love, darling, and put in a line about poop.
Yeah, poo-poo, pee-pee.
Yeah. Let me just... I'm just going to rewind it a couple of bars so you can hear what I'm talking about. It's like the one place in the song where they went off theme, and you know, you don't want to go back and reinterpret the whole song inside a framework of love, because that sucks.
Bummer. Bummer.
Whoa.
Ooh.
Ooh, whoa.
You forgot about that cutout.
Got two successive woes.
The dad. You had a double
awesome
woe.
High note.
The first one was for the cutout, the dropout, where the whole band drops just out for her belting that high note.
Incredible vocal prowess, you know, on display throughout the whole song. I'm a sucker for the dropout. I know it's an easy trick. By saying it's a trick, I'm not saying it's any less skillful. But when they drop out all the instruments and the vocal is exposed, and not exposed in a YouTube drama T sort of way, but just exposed so that you can hear all its glory.
Yeah. She has an amazing voice, and this is going to sound like a complisult, a complimenting insult, but I mean this as a compliment. She has like the best possible voice that still feels achievable. This is not a song with a lot of melismas or vocal pyrotechnics showing off a lot of like fast notes in rapid succession, because it's not the style. You just have this very clear belting.
I see why that could be seen as a complisult, but really you're saying she's like the Monet of singing, because when the layperson sees some impressionism, they're like, I could do that, but they can't. And she's painting a beautiful painting from the quiet parts to the belty parts.
Yeah. Now, speaking of belting parts, she gets to the end of her sung bridge here and then hands off. It's sort of like when you give the rapper a featured verse. That's what we're about to get here on the remainder of this bridge is we're finally going to get a showcase for this dude, Paul, the uncredited yelling rapper who's been in the background up until this point. Here we are, you know, about 3 minutes in, and this guy gets his own stanza. Got real metal.
Oh, Evanescence featuring The Lonely Island.
Oh,
this part is just blowing my mind, because it's like, so we had this whole song,
yeah,
like an entire song structure of verses, bridges, chorai, and then all of a sudden we get here.
Yeah, it's already long enough to be a song. I just paused it at 3 minutes.
And again, that's another thing that I think is admirable about this song, is that so many times people are like, let's make it 3:10 or whatever, and this one's longer, and that's cool. But then you get to this section, all of a sudden it's like this sort of like proto Nelly kind of flow, where it's like, good gracious, ass is bodacious.
All this time, like, I can't believe I couldn't see.
It's like if Nelly was being rapped by like a youth pastor. It was like, I don't listen to edgy music. I rap about wholesome things, or something like that.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, between you and me, you can see why the youth groups maybe thought that this was a Jesus song. All this time, I can't believe I couldn't see. Kept in the dark, but you were there in front of me. Oh, what is he talking about? What could have saved him?
Yeah, I mean, I can already picture like a youth pastor preaching about this song like a couple weeks after it came out. You know, like I was down in the mall a couple weeks ago, and I heard this song bring me to life. And at first I thought, this might be of the devil. I see in the video they're wearing dark clothes. It might be a pentagram. When I look closer, there's no pentagram. And really, they're talking about the love of Jesus, bringing them to life. I mean, it would just fit perfectly, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I don't listen to bands like Queen, drawing people in towards sin.
I don't go for Bohemians.
Yeah.
I do want to stop them from having a good time.
I remember there was like a youth pastor in our neck of the woods who was like trying to get us to not listen to Queen. And Queen at that time seemed so tame because it's like old. You think you're listening to classics. And I remember him saying that. I'm just interrogating my own mind, just being like, what in Queen is bad? Like trying to figure out what is it, the bicycles? Is it the songs about space? Is it space? I'm just trying to figure out like what it could be, because I thought Queen was like the oldest, like tamest stuff.
Could be the Fat Bottom Girls.
Only certain kinds of bottoms would be allowed.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. It gets a lot harder here at the end. Like, all of a sudden, they got a little death metal here at the end.
Don't let me die here.
Oh, it's too much. I'm going to bring it up on the... I'm going to find that spot on the a cappella, and you can hear exposed what they're doing with their voices. That scream, "There must be something more!" is truly unhinged. So it's pretty amazing that would be in a hit song. I don't know. If I'm punching it up in 2022, I delete it. Sorry, metalheads.
Yeah, again, it does seem like we're suddenly jumping to Paranormal Activity. It's like, "I've been asleep for 1,000 years. I see dead people."
Yeah, it's just it's a musical jump scare.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Don't let me die here.
Still can't wake up. Guitars did a little drop out there just for a little variation because they have to have a repeat. There's that metal yell again. It came back in.
This also seems like a song where like the DJ is singing over the whole thing. You know when the DJ starts singing with the chorus at the end before he goes to the next track?
Yeah.
Like, the whole time he's just like, "I've been living a lie." Okay, I like this ending, how they're just fading and they got that drum machine.
Yeah, and it cut out just to the strings.
And, you know, I also think it's cool how at the end of the chorus, she hits that melisma that goes down, and on the second middle note of the melisma, that's on the downbeat.
Doo-doo. Yeah, with a lot of rhythmic power. Man, okay, a lot of stuff to work on here. A lot of stuff
that they apparently already worked on. They beat us to the punch. They beat you to the punch.
Yeah. In fact, I'll pull it in.
Yeah, we gotta compare and contrast. See if this is just a clean mute, if everything is the same and it's just a muted track, or if it's revamped. We'll see how many vamps there are.
Yeah, there's a lot to work on here, but unfortunately, the most obvious punch, which is delete the guy yelling at you, has already been done by the actual band. And here is Bring Me to Life. From their re-release, they had an album called Synthesis 4 or 5 years ago, and the version they put on that album did not have the male rapper. Here's a bit of it. Just pure orchestra, not even the piano part.
Oh, wow. That's a big statement, not doing the piano.
Those bendy strings make it extra spooky. My core, where I've become so numb. Whoa, the chimes. So this is like a reimagining where it's there's no percussion, there's no guitars, just some synth elements, just leaning into the film score side of it.
It's a parenthesis Amy's version.
That's it. It's just purely orchestral. So that really is a reimagining of the song to not have it be a rock song with no guitars and drums. It's just the orchestra, a couple of synth elements, and her voice. And there was, it really didn't even have any harmonies.
But that's also
completely
a great
performance.
That's a great demonstration of how the song holds up for any era if it can just hold up orchestrally. Mm-hmm. And it's not like it depended on the crunchy guitars that were
ubiquitous in 2004. And it's not like I've met doubters of this song. I've never met a doubter of this song in my life. Everyone I've met has affirmed the power of this song. But if there was a doubter, if there were a doubter and they heard this version, their doubting would stop. It would say, okay, that could have survived in the 1800s, the 1900s.
They'd stop doubting,
the 2100s. They'd
say, I abandoned my doubting of this song.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that really takes something away from us in our effort to go punch up this song. We got a few other things to work on that we talked about. I propose that we take a break, we go have a wrestling match about it, and then we'll come back and play the punch.
Okay, yeah, we can still find a way.
We can find a way. It's going to happen. I hope. We are back with a punch-up and a sharp pivot from tradition as I hereby announce that this is going to be a guest punch. We walked away from our discussion of the song and Michael got inspired.
You guys are a man down. It's just you. I want to give you a little bit, a wee bit of respite.
Oh,
I want to punch this.
The generosity.
You're the man now, dog.
The kindness, the thoughtfulness. That's beautiful, man. Thank you. I appreciate
your
support.
I do my part.
Support.
Sometimes I might wash a dish. I might punch a punch. I'll do what I can.
I'll take it, man. I will take it. I love doing the punch-ups, and I also love not doing them and just listening to them. We talked about this a bit off mic, but tell everybody what your thought process was.
Okay, so the thought process was, as we said in the past segments, we wanted to mute the tracks of the yelling, right? And the whispering. But then guess what? The band already did it. They were one step ahead of us. Actually, probably several years ahead of us.
They had the same thought. What if we just deleted this guy?
Yeah, they reimagined the track. And so the punch that we dreamed of was already done. So I thought, what if we did the exact opposite and muted everything else? We just completely reimagine it, but the other way. Mute everything except for the guy and Amy Lee. Mm-hmm. So we really just put a punctuation, like put an exclamation point on the weirdness of those two voices being together. Just the siren's call, the beautiful singing, and then the guy just shouting at you. I just want to focus on that.
The siren's call that's hypnotizing you and trying to bring you to life, and then the dude yelling at you. What a cosmic pairing. But how does it work if you delete it? The whole musical context of this guy yelling at you is the crunchy guitars and the beefy drums and the new metal sounds of the early 2000s. You know, the yelling is a bit much, but you accept it because that's the tradition of the time, you know?
You're right. You hear the yelling. If you heard it by itself, you'd be like, what is this? But then you hear the crunchy guitar and you imagine the frosted tips and you're like, well, that fits.
Oh, well, this guy sure is. He really yelling at me a lot, but
it's peas and carrots.
I did have some crunchy guitars, yeah. Oh, that guy over there with the frosted tips, really, he's playing some metal riffs, so I guess it's okay if this guy's yelling at me. Oh, okay, yeah, sure.
But I wanted to go extreme in the opposite direction. So with their punch up, by muting that track, they showed us with their reimagined version that this could survive in the 1800s, in the early 1900s, in this orchestral world where people are going to the Met Opera and somebody is just belting this and the blue hairs are looking at the singer with like opera glasses. Like, ooh, the Wake Me Up is really turning me on in the third act. I really enjoy how this protagonist is bringing this all around. But will it survive in the 2000s? Yes, it did. It's a huge hit. Billions of listens and views. So I'm going to do the exact opposite and take it to a wildly different decade where shouting is extremely out of place.
Yeah, there's a lot of decades where shouting was out of place in popular music. I'm hungry for this one, man. Let's hit play. Here is the punch up. Is this just the two of us? By Grover Washington? And Bill Withers?
Maybe. Still a haunting keyboard.
Oh, it is. You're right. They have that in common. A haunting keyboard intro. It's perfect. It just fits.
I moved that note. Didn't move too many, though.
Yeah, because you're an artist.
But I shifted the key up to F minor.
The syncopation works so good over this beat.
Listen to this beat, man. Oh, it's incredibly smooth.
Not as smooth as that. It's smoother. Just hold on to your seat.
Oh, it's gotta get extremely smooth.
The smoothest thing you've ever heard, followed by the roughest thing. Yin and yang, my friend.
Oh, that was so jazzy, followed by so metal.
Oh my god, it's so good. Make it smoother.
Smoother.
Oh,
more smooth.
More sax.
More sax.
More
sax.
Steel drum. It's got everything.
Oh, it's an absolute bop.
The fade out is perfect for this because you know the smoothness never ends.
You know the smoothness never ends.
It's still going on to this day. It's
that
been going
fade
on
out
for 50 years now.
That fade out implying smoothness to eternity. Oh, man, it's a masterpiece.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, it's just awesome. You did it. You put it in another decade. We wanted to delete the second singer, but instead you deleted everything else. And, okay, you put it over the instrumental of Just the Two of Us. And it's perfect because now what do you have left when you delete everything else in the song? You have just the two of them.
Just two of them. Although,
just Amy Lee and Paul McCoy hanging out, broing down, figuratively speaking.
In the Starbucks. It does feel like three of them because the sax is just wailing. But
yeah.
Two singers.
That was so incredibly smooth. And you really surprised me with some really jazzy chord in the middle. What happened there?
I can't remember the original key of this song. I may have moved them both to meet each other. Mm-hmm. We ended up in F minor. I think Evanescence used to be in E minor. So, you know, somewhere we cosmically met in the 70s and at F minor. And I'll scoot over there and try to play what was going on. To do the turnaround. So you already have that in the progression, this kind of like major seven, the dominant seven, you have the major five in the minor key. And then you get to this section in the middle. But instead of going up this time, it just keeps going down. So we made her sing over that. That was the most foreign thing to their Evanescence original song. And we were like, all right, we got it. This is gonna blow minds if we just make her chill vocal fit over that. Because it really does work in a jazzy way. Bring me to life. So it's like... She's singing an E in the key of F minor. So that usually is not in the key of F minor, but it would be when you're playing a C major. But in this context, it's funny because it's over an A major chord, major seven chord, which would not be in F minor because, you know, F minor has an A flat. It wouldn't have an A major chord.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's so tasty. That's the complicated version of why it's tasty, but you don't need to know all that extra stuff to just feel that it's tasty.
Yeah, it's just a foreign chord. You just know it's a surprise. Mm-hmm. You just know it's a surprise, and it tastes so good. Mm-hmm. This is a masterful punch-up. You're teaching a class while you come on here as a guest. Albeit a heightened guest, when we just pull you from within our own family to guest on the podcast. But this is a masterful punch-up.
Thank you.
And it's absolutely improved.
Yeah, you know, this totally reversed me, reversed all my emotions, and it made me sentimentally really attached to the yelling. Now I love the yelling. I came into this podcast just diametrically opposed to the yelling. Now I am going to go and convert everybody to a yelling disciple.
The jazzy rendition turned you pro-yell.
Yeah. Just the sheer fish-out-of-water moment of when she hits that tasty note, bring me to life. And then he's like, she's really smooth, and then he goes, there's nothing inside. That was my proudest moment of pushing pixels around. You know, sometimes if you're making a meme or a shitpost, as one does, you can kind of, sometimes there are moments when you lose the joy of it because you're pushing a pixel around. It goes into the pixel domain where you forget the beautiful idea. This can happen in any art form. I'm sure if you're painting an oil painting, maybe you're just like, this is just raw material that means nothing. You forget about the emotion.
Yeah, you get stuck in the drudgery. You forget the bigger picture.
Yeah, you forget the bigger picture.
You lose sight of the art.
And this was a moment when that pixel got pushed onto the other pixel, and that track went over the tasty Grover Washington Jr. saxophone solo. It brought the joy back.
It brought you to life.
Yes.
Well, it highlighted successfully the most important thing about this track, which was the unholy duet between the beautiful singing of Amy Lee and the yelling of Paul McCoy Jr. Normal Paul McCoy. Just regular Paul McCoy, but his very unregular yelling. When you really look at just the two of them, you really get a different look at the song, a better look. This song has been punched up. I thank you on behalf of myself and my absent co-host Andrew, but especially on behalf of the audience. The last segment of our show is called Walk-In Music. What is your walk-in music? And it's a time in which we play songs that we truly love, but this week I am canceling it.
Oh, no.
Whoa,
that's
what a
right.
Twist.
Yeah, when Andrew.
I love when people set something up and then have a twist that fast.
Yeah, I twisted you really quick. And
oh, behave.
You can't make me behave when Andrew's not here. And the reason I'm canceling it is because off mic, Michael let slip another dastardly secret, which is it's so obvious now that I'm sitting here that I can't believe I didn't ask you while we were listening to your amazing punch up. Which is, if Just the Two of Us goes so well with just the two of Amy Lee and Paul McCoy from Bring Me to Life, then is the reverse true? Does Evanescence's track go well with the tune of Just the Two of Us? That's the question I should have posed, and you kind of let slip a little secret that you had dabbled in this alchemy, in this utter witchcraft.
You have to know, you have to find out, do the laws of physics apply to this situation? Does the action have an equal and opposite reaction?
You're a music physicist. Yeah. Well, and a music witch. I mean, to me, it feels inspired by the goth aesthetic of Evanescence that you would pitch these things together in the musical cauldron.
Depending on what century you're in, you know, witchcraft and physics can be indistinguishable. Yeah. You could be getting burned for doing physics in the 1200s.
Yeah, that's right. Any sufficiently advanced technology appears the same as magic. And that's definitely what's happening here. This advanced remix appears like magic to me. So, in lieu of walk-in music, or maybe it is our walk-in music this week, will be, if the punch-up was unholy, then this is doubly unholy, or maybe does a double unholy make it holy? The reverse remix, the reverse punch-up.
Yes, this could be walk-in music, spoiler alert, in certain situations.
Mm-hmm. So let's pitch a situation in which we would walk in to this, what do we call it, reverse punch-up?
Okay, yeah, a situation I would walk into this is, my name is Michael Morbius. I am
starring in the movie Morbius 2, Morbius, spelled M-O-R-E hyphen
sure.
B-I-U-S.
Sure. You want Morbius?
Yeah. And so I am walking out into the rain on an empty street, down the middle of the street, and I'm about to battle the famous nemesis of Michael Morbius.
Uh-huh.
That nemesis we all know about.
Yeah, who is the...
Morbius enemy.
Is the nemesis of Morbius Michael Moore, the filmmaker?
Is it probably a Joker-esque character?
Okay, great point. So the original Evanescence song, Bring Me to Life, became a hit because it was included on the soundtrack of the smash hit Daredevil, iconic superhero movie. And you're going the same route.
Mm-hmm.
This song is going right on the soundtrack of the smash hit to be Morbius 2.
Yes.
We want Morbius.
We want Morbius. This has to be a gritty superhero movie or anti-hero movie.
Mm-hmm.
Too gritty for a sunny MCU movie.
Mm-hmm. Is We Want Morbius kind of a buddy comedy? Are there two of them?
I think the two in question is the villain. It's like before the fight scene. They should maybe save this until they get to Forbius, the fourth Morbius film. Because when they're kicking off a new trilogy after Morbius 1 through 3 rakes in $5 billion,
mm-hmm.
for Forbius, they need to pack a really strong punch to get people back in.
Okay, and then we get right to the climactic boss fight scene, and this track drops. Mm. Just as tense as the first time you heard it. They stare into each other's eyes, knowing they must destroy one another.
Rain droplets running down the hair.
I see the crystal raindrops fall. And
raindrops
the
right there.
When the sun comes shining through.
Think like, you know, Neo fighting Agent Smith in that last Matrix movie.
This does sound like the Matrix fight. Man, this goes together better than I thought.
Just the two of us. We can make it if we try. Just the two of us.
I almost left in the guy saying, "Wake me up!" But I resisted.
Yeah, it's hard to hear it without the guy.
But we've got the
just the two of us. Castles in the sky. Just the two of us.
I don't know if Morbius and the giant robot villain are going to be fighting or kissing.
No time for tears. Wasted was all I need, and it don't make no flowers grow.
Ooh, melody's so smooth. It could be fighting, could be Frenching.
And there's a lot of syncopation in his singing. It's kind of simpatico with Amy Lee's.
Yeah, Paige from the same book.
Man, that's so good.
Drop
again. The exposed trick works great for him.
Oh, that little bent note.
Castles in the sky. I hear the crystal raindrops fall on the window.
And one thing I just love about his voice is how it's both energetic and chill at the same time. It's a nice quality over this.
Bill Withers is the most chill of singers I think.
Just the two of us. We can make
now the drops are just funny. The cutouts.
Maybe I should have brought in the saxophone.
Just the two of us. Building big castles we own high. Just the two of us. You and I.
Come on, man. This mashup is incredible. Listen to him go.
You can hear a little bit of bass in there. I couldn't isolate the vocals perfectly.
That's a first for the podcast. We had the punch up, which was a mashup, and then the reverse mash in the same episode. It's historic.
Isaac Newton would be happy. That his rules were proven correct.
Yeah, that every mashup has an equal and opposite remashup. Michael, thanks a million for stepping into the arena of this podcast and like going way above and beyond the Call of Duty with a guest punch, and not just a guest punch, but the Newtonian repunch.
You know, you do some music, you do some science.
Is it okay if we make this guest punch available on the show Patreon?
Yes.
Everybody
absolutely
knows or should know that you can get all the punch-ups, including now this delicious mashup on our Patreon, which is patreon.com/GregoryBrothers. And you can also follow the show and follow us for updates on the podcast and all sorts of behind-the-scenes stuff. The show is at Punch Up the Jam. You can follow me, Evan, at Get Some Evan. And you can follow my guest, my brother Michael,
at Shmo Yoho, S-C-H-M-O-Y-O-H-O. And if you do end up downloading the track, I have a request. Please play it in front of your friend at some surprise moment. Secretly film the reaction. I just have to know whether they would flip in a negative or positive way. I just want to see a freak out.
I just want to see a reaction. I just want to see somebody brought to life for once. Play them the punch up and then look at them straight in the eyes and ask them, are you happy?
Mm-hmm.
Be careful who you do that with, because you could end up married to them 4 years later.
It was a cultural reset.
Film them, film their reaction, and let us know, were they brought to life? That's our show, folks. Bring your friends to life with this punch up.
Let's punch it.
Punch up the jam, punch it up. While you beat your feet, punch up the jam, punch it up. Punch it, punch it, punch it. Punch up the jam, punch it up. Get the party going, get your feet. Punch up the jam, punch it up. Punch it.
You've been listening to Punch Up the Jam.
That was a HeadGum original.